Hi, good morning. This is Yumi Kikuchi podcast. This is June 17th, 2006. And here I have Jimmy Walter with me. Wow. Hi, Jimmy.
Hi, Yumi. Thank you for having me.
Welcome to Japan and thank you for doing all this.
Well, thank you for all the things that you've done for this trip. You're quite an organizer.
Well, I guess I did my best, but I've been enjoying having you, and it's a great honor to have you at that place.
Well, it's entirely my honor to be here.
Yes, Jimmy, tell me, how successful are you in this reopen 911 thing? It's changing the world. People are waking up everywhere. Wherever you go, I guess.
Well, people are waking up, but the governments are not waking up.
They don't want to, of course. They want war.
It seems to be that way.
They're the ones, you know, who are making money, and, you know, it's a big business.
Well, plus fear galvanizes the people behind the government.
Mm-hmm.
Fear gets the people to give their money to the government.
Right.
And fear gets the government to give the money to the arms manufacturers, who are the people who elect the politicians.
Mm-hmm. That's so true. It's true here, too. That's the new laws we are passing now is awful, you know, terrorizing us and getting rid of, you know, rip off my freedom, and, you know, it's happening in the United States, but same thing is happening here.
Well, it's just like the old novel by George Orwell, 1984,
right.
Where the world is broken up into three blocks, and they don't really fight each other in order to win, because they need an enemy
right.
to fight.
Yeah. So, yeah, they keep saying, they even create the enemy. They like the enemy, right?
Of course.
Yeah.
In the novel, there's a man called Emmanuel Goldstein, mm-hmm. a terrorist, mm-hmm. who never gets caught. Does it sound like Bin Laden to you?
Zarqawi or whoever, you know. Yeah, they create new terrorists one after another. Anyway, we've been doing quite well since he arrived here on the 14th. The following day, we had a great meeting at the Diet, Shugin Kaikan, hosted by Kina Shokichi, the Diet member. And that evening, we had another meeting at the Olympic Center. And the following day, we had a beautiful lunch at a Japanese old inn, Yoshimizu, on the 16th. And that evening, we had another press conference at Tokyo Foreign Correspondent Club. And what you'll be listening now is his presentation at Tokyo Foreign Correspondent Club on the 16th, yesterday. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Foreign Correspondents for this afternoon. We're pleased to be joined this afternoon by Mr. Jimmy Walter, who's sitting to my right. Mr. Walter is, as you saw in the notice, a millionaire businessman, the kind of guy that usually probably doesn't have to do these types of things. Usually doesn't have to do very much to lead a pretty comfortable life. But Mr. Walter has been spending his time recently putting his money to use. Campaigning against several different causes that he believes in. At the moment, he's looking at the September 11th investigation and leading a campaign to reopen the investigation. We were just talking in the ante room, and it turns out that he's also planning a larger conference in Tokyo later this year, which I hope he's going to tell us about. And we're also going to hear something about why he thinks that we've all been duped about what happened on September 11th. So without further ado, Mr. Walker, please.
Thank you for having us. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. The September 11th terrorist attacks did occur, but the terrorists were not 19 Arabs with box cutters. Technologically and logistically impossible. What has been perpetrated upon the American people in the world is a vast media hoax supported by the mainstream media in order to foment hatred of the Muslims as an excuse to attack Iraq, Afghanistan, and eventually Iran for many different purposes. Now, I want to emphasize that this is not the entire government of the United States, not the entire government of England, not the entire government of Israel. not the entire government of any country, but elements of these governments definitely participated, and took advantage of these for many purposes. We'll start with the Pentagon, since it has been recently in the news. Here's a picture of the Pentagon before the fires collapsed the roof. You can notice here that there are only three major holes, here, here, and here. Popular mechanics and the government have told us that the 5-ton engines, the main landing gear, the wing engine mounts, and the main wing spars vaporized or turned into a liquid and went through one of those holes. Here is a representation of a 757. The engines are touching the ground. The tail is barely below the top of the building. You'll notice that no skid marks in front of the building, and that the intact spools of wire are right below, so no engine clipped them. They then released this picture of what allegedly hit the Pentagon. Now, you'll notice a small tail and what looks like the front of an airplane here, and this wiggly white whatever it is behind it. You can clearly see that this is nowhere big enough to be a 757. Yet the main announcers for ABC, CBS, NBC, BBC, Fox all said, oh, this proves a 757 hit the Pentagon. Now, I'll back up one more, just so you can see again how big a 757 would have been relative to the building. Now, what's even more curious is this wiggly white trail here. Now, you've all looked up in the sky and see the white trails behind the jets. But immediately behind the jet, it's straight. It only becomes wiggly hundreds of yards, thousands of yards behind after it's had time to be affected by the wind. Furthermore, jets do not leave vapor trails at ground level. Only at high altitudes where the air is cold enough to freeze the molecule, water molecules in it. This image has been altered in the laboratory. This is proof of manipulation by the government of the information that's been released. This is the new video the government released a few weeks ago. One that they claim, oh my God, here you can see the plane. This is the only frame you can see of the image. If we have time later, I'll show you the video. Again, far too small to be part of a 757. All right, so up and down there is all you need to get. This is an aerial of the Pentagon after the attack. There are three exit holes. The apparent line of the incoming plane would have been here. This hole and this hole are too far apart to be the engines, the landing gear, or anything else. Now, I'm going to tell you what I think happened. What we have here is a triple test by the U.S. military. They had hardened, reinforced this face of the Pentagon only. The Pentagon has missile defense batteries around it to shoot down any incoming aircraft, unless it comes in low, fast, and hard, like the picture before showed. So what you had here was a test of a U.S. or somebody's aircraft to attack a hardened structure to get by the radar. It was a test of the military's defensive missile batteries to see if they could stop it. And it was a test of the hardening of the Pentagon to see if it could withstand it. What you're seeing, the other two holes, are the exit holes for the defensive missiles that popped up, swung around too late, and fired after the incoming aircraft, missing it, going into the hole, and making the other two exit holes. Here is the hole the government claims was made by the 767. They say, oh, the nose made it through. The soft aluminum nose made it through. But the 5-ton engines,
the main landing gear, and the engine mounts, and the wing spars, which have to support the whole weight of the plane, vaporized. Well, the landing gear was still in the wings, so there should have been a place here for the landing gear, and then a place here for the engine. But this is a perfect size hole for a bunker buster missile, or a bunker or a small remotely controlled aircraft with the nose full of depleted uranium. The fact of the matter is, if you looked at the cleanup crews, I don't have these pictures here today, they all wore full decontamination outfits. They were scrubbed down. The military knew there was depleted uranium in whatever hit the Pentagon. Now, these photographs were released of the triage, the first aid given to the people who were injured in the Pentagon. Now, you can't see the coloration here very well because of the projector, but in the original, you can see there's a strip of grass here, and here is a different color than the grass here. This is an overlay. But pay particular notice, which is easier to see. There's no guardrail here. There's no guardrail here. Next, please. However, here we have a guardrail. Here we have two guardrails. Note the fire truck. Okay? Here the guardrail's nice and shiny. Here it's rusty. What we have here are whistleblowers. People in the government who were forced to participate in this fraud, leaving visual clues so that those of us who examine them carefully can tell that this is an out-and-out fraud. Now, somebody wants to say, oh, well, maybe this guardrail you can't see, but if you look at the distances here, you can see that if this shows two guardrails, this should have shown the two guardrails. This is a picture of the WTC under construction. Notice the massive core columns in the center. And this, which is the floor, each floor. Okay, next please. Here, before the collapse, we can see molten steel coming out the sides of the building. Jet fuel, at its best, all hydrocarbons, office contents, the maximum temperature they can reach in an open air flame, not a Bessemer furnace, which is a forced air flame, but an open air flame is 1,800 degrees Fahrenheit. The black smoke here indicates that the fires were well below it, because 1,800 degrees is that bright blue flame you see on your gas stove or in your heater. That's 1,800 degrees. The black smoke means the fires never reached over 500 degrees. Yet we have molten steel coming out. This is evidence of thermite cutter charges weakening the structure for the impending collapse. Next please. Here's a picture of one of the buildings before the collapse. Black. What are these raging inferno fires that are weakening the steel? How did this woman walk through fires hot enough to melt steel? Next, you'll see a close-up of her. Here she is. How could that happen if there's this raging inferno in the center? Next, please. Here's a picture of the Madrid fire. It burned for 24 hours like a torch. But the next day, still standing with a crane on top. No steel building has ever been destroyed by fire before or since. The Cardigan Group, a testing lab, tried to destroy a building with jet fuel and could not do it. Fire Engine Magazine said no steel building has ever been destroyed by fire and called the WTC investigation a half-baked farce. These are the experts in fire. Next slide. Now, the government Dow tells us that each floor pancaked down, that they separated somehow from the core columns to cause this collapse. Remember those heavy steel core centers in the center? Well, if it detached, what pulled down those steel columns in the center? And furthermore, they didn't come straight down, because this corner of the building is exploding way ahead of this one. Next, please. You'll see it in this motion. Those clouds of highly pulverized concrete and steel if the floor is coming down like that and only hitting on the corner, there's not enough force. There's another problem. They claim the bolts were weakened by the fire. Well, if you're going to pulverize the concrete, it's the relative force. If my hand gives way, then there's not enough resistance, no matter what the weight above, to crush the concrete. Furthermore, not only the concrete, but the office contents, the computers, the desk, the fireman's report, and if we have time later, I'll play the clip. They didn't find anything larger than half of a keypad in the building. Now, you've all seen the crushers of automobiles. I can see the desk and stuff being crushed. But the concrete on each floor was 5.5 inches thick and in a steel pan covered with carpet. How did that concrete leap out of that pan and get ejected into the air? Next. Please click on this. And say okay. All right. Now this is a picture that you saw earlier in the screensaver. Notice these pieces coming up and out. Watch this one come way over here. Structural steel is brittle. It doesn't flex. It doesn't fly. It breaks. Yet here we have things flying up and out with smoke trails behind them. What is the mechanism that could possibly cause that to happen? Close this, please. Now hit it down. Now this is a video produced by a man who's in the room actually today.
This is just off the back.
All right. If you will click on the picture, just click on the picture. Anyway.
Seven World Trade fell 100 meters in 4.5 seconds, the same time required for a 100-meter free fall in a vacuum. In a normal collapse, resistance from a steel frame support and moment of inertia would significantly increase the time required. Here we see a summary of the results for our free fall experiment.
A little slow starting. The next part.
Now let's compare the real-time video with the free fall gravity laboratory.
Here, and it will drop relative to that.
Factor difficulties around the area. New Jersey Transit outbound. All control operating on a Lumberfield base. No inbound service.
The building falls faster than a free fall belt ball.
Let's remove the air resistance and use freeze frame analysis to get a better look at the fall.
Now the ball will fall as if it were in a vacuum.
The ball has started to drop, yet 7 World Trade is still above the starting line. At the 1 second mark, 7 World Trade and the ball are still even. Seven World Trade indeed falls 100 meters in 4.5 seconds. We observe that World Trade Center 7 fell faster than the speed of gravity, equivalent to the speed of free fall in a vacuum. We must conclude that a vacuum was created characteristic of an implosion where the structure is pulled down by a controlled demolition. Our supporting evidence is that debris fell neatly within the footprint of the building. An eyewitness heard a loud clap of thunder and saw a shockwave rip through the building, blowing out windows, before the ground floor exploded, and a second later, the building came down. Rick's tape recorded a large explosion 9.5 seconds before any signs of collapse were visible.
Okay, you hit it down there now. This is a picture of Hiroshima after nuclear weapon. The steel frame building is still standing. Next. This is Larry Silverstein. He's the leaseholder of the World Trade Center 6 months prior to the attack. He insured the building for $3 billion. He invested $245 million. He tried to get double indemnity, say it was two attacks, and get $6 billion. He replaced the security staff with a staff of a company called SecureCorp, which just happens to have Marvin Bush, brother of George I, on the board of directors. He forced all of the leaseholders to allow him to examine their premises for security while they were gone. Tenants in the building report that there were strange goings on in the elevator shafts in the weeks before, with men with strange machines with screens on them working in there. If anyone approached, the security staff immediately ushered them away. Larry Silverstein is a close personal friend of Netanyahu, former head of Mossad and former prime minister of Israel. They speak on the phone every week for at least an hour. Please hit the down. Now you're going to hear Larry... Wait a second, because it starts immediately. In the next clip, you're going to hear Larry Silverstein use the word pull and pull it several times. But most importantly, I want you to listen to the last phrase at which he says, pull. Please go ahead.
I remember getting a call from the fire department commander telling me that they were not sure they were going to be able to contain the fire. I said, you know, we've had such terrible loss of life. Maybe the smartest thing to do is pull. And they made that decision to pull, and then we watched the building collapse.
It's gone, man.
Now, the facts are that the tenants of World Trade Center 7 were pulled between 9 and 10 a.m. in the morning. The firemen were out of there way before that, before 5:30 in the afternoon when the building fell. But Larry Silverstein used the word pull, not evacuate, not got the firemen out, and pull it is an industry term in the demolition industry of buildings, which means to pull the building down with explosives. Now, he said, they made a decision to pull it, and we watched the building collapse. Some hours later, we watched the building collapse in one breath. He now claims he's talking about pulling the firemen. But why do you keep using an industry-specific term? A term as a man in the construction business he must have known. Next. The media distorts and covers up what's happening. Six hijackers, are alive and been interviewed by the major news services, the mainstream news services. Yet the FBI still has them listed as dead hijackers. Yes, last week the FBI admitted they did not have enough evidence to indict bin Laden. You'll hear more of this lately. Bin Laden has never attacked a civilian target before. He's only attacked military targets. Because under Islam, it is against Islamic law to kill women and children. He merely said in the first news release he was happy it happened. Today, 66% of Fox viewers believe Hussein had weapons of mass destruction and was an ally of bin Laden. I'd like to tell you a little joke. Alexander the Great, Attila the Hun, and Napoleon are in heaven looking down on today. Alexander says, if I'd only had machine guns, I'd have conquered all of India. Attila says, I have tanks, I conquered Europe, Africa. Napoleon says, if I only had an American news, no one would have known I lost in Russia. The New York Times refuses to publish my $1 million challenge to anyone who can prove explosives were not used. The New York Times refuses to print my surveys, which show that 68% of New Yorkers want a new investigation, that 50% of New Yorkers think members of the government let it happen, that 32% of New Yorkers think members of the government were actively involved. I was in New York last November protesting in front of the New York Times, and I had up a sign, New York Times prints Judith Miller's lies but can't see my $1 million challenge. I'm dressed in a suit. I'm sitting there. I'm standing in one spot. I'm going like this. The guard comes out and says, you're blocking the entrance. And I wasn't. I said, well, it's fine. I'm sorry, I won't block the entrance. Do you want me to call the police or not? I said, no, I don't. I'm calling the police. Police come. He says, what are you doing? I said, I'm protesting. No, oh, you're exercising your right of First Amendment speech, free speech. I said, yes. So he goes in, talks to the guard, comes out. Well, New York law, you got to be 20 feet from an entrance and on the curb. So we found a spot and I went over there. So I'm still protesting, but I up the ante and I start pulling out pictures of the deaths of the babies in Volusia. And I have graphic pictures. The cops come again. The cop says, they tell me you've been chasing people with your DD into the building. I said, no, I'm not. I'm staying right here where you told me to stand. So they talk, one cop, they have a new cop, and I'm giving away the freebies. He said, are you selling these? I said, no, I'm the freebies. You like them? I said, no, I don't want one. Think about it. The New York Times lied. The New York Times tried to intimidate me. The New York Times tried to suppress my freedom of speech. Next. I'm not alone. The media regularly portrays me and others as lone nuts, when in fact there are over 3,000 books, 500 videos, and 200 organizations worldwide exposing the lies and in-job aspects of 911. The media portrays professors, engineers, historians, and high-ranking generals and colonels, ex-military, as crazy. Next, please. Here's an example of the CNN fakery. This is a real picture of Osama bin Laden. And this is the picture, allegedly, of Osama bin Laden with military miraculously found in Afghanistan, where this figure on the left claims that he caused September 11th. Compare the noses. Compare the eyes. Compare the ears. CNN ran the photo clip on the left for 6 months in its lead-in to the nightly news. Surely they have someone who does photo analysis. Next one. There's a media conspiracy to de-inflame Muslims and dehumanize them. You all heard about the recent Mohammed cartoons. Well, the fact is those cartoons were published in Egypt in April of that year, last year. They were published again in Amsterdam about 2 months before Fleming, a Zionist, decided to publish them. Fleming is on record as having to refuse to print anti-Sharon and anti-Christian cartoons because, quote, he didn't want to upset people. Now, 7 newspapers across Europe printed the cartoons on the same day under the excuse of defense of freedom of speech. Yet in April of this year, a man in Austria was sent to jail for 3 years for questioning the details of the Holocaust. Not one of those 8 newspapers said one word in defense of his freedom of speech. The mainstream media continues to mistranslate the Iranian president, who's no hero of mine. He's a religious nut. He said he thought the occupation should be wiped off the face of the map, not Israel. It's not the first time they've mistranslated what the Arabs have to say. Next book. I believe there's an attack on Iran is imminent. There's already one carrier group in the Persian Gulf. The Ronald Reagan, the largest aircraft carrier in the world, and its accompanying 22 ships, left KL last week, or the week before, en route to the Persian Gulf. There's another aircraft carrier group on the way there, too. They'll all be on station in about 2 weeks. Just the time that President Bush has given Iran to accede to the current demand. The American and European press keep vilifying Iran while ignoring North Korea, which has nukes, which is developing an ICBM that can hit San Francisco. Under Iranian Islamic laws, I said before, it's illegal to kill women and children in a war. Iran is 5 to 10 years away from having a nuclear weapon. Even if they did, remember this, for 68 years, The Soviet Union has had nuclear weapons, ICBMs, and submarines capable of destroying many, 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 many targets in the United States. Neither side has fired a missile, fired a nuclear weapon because of mutual assured destruction. Israel has nuclear weapons. Israel bought a submarine from the Germans, a missile submarine capable of carrying nuclear warheads. If Iran was dumb enough to set off a nuclear weapon, Israel and the United States would nuke them till they glowed. This whole thing about nuclear weapons is, again, the same false negotiating, the same false crisis leading up to the Iraq war. But Bush is at 33-39, if you read the Fox poll, percent approval. Only 33% or so support the Iraq war. Less support attacking Iran. Now, some people say that he doesn't need another 9-1-1. He's just going to do it because he's got nothing to lose. I believe that there will be another 9-1-1 blamed on the Arabs soon, and I think it'll be nuclear, because if it is, everybody in the United States will rally behind the president and say, we have to stop Iran. On 9-1-1-2001, there was an actual terror drill going on at the World Trade Center the day of the attack. Coincidence? On July 7th, there was a terror drill going into subway stations where the attack actually happened. Another coincidence. A few months ago, they had a terror attack for a nuclear weapon being set off in a container vessel off of Charleston, South Carolina. Now, if a nuclear weapon went off in a container vessel off of South Carolina, it would hurt, but the damage militarily and economically would be minimal. The government could claim, oh, well, we stopped them from getting on shore, and they set it off at the last minute. So you can't blame us for not stopping it. It would have maximum terror, minimum economic effect. Let's all pray that I'm wrong.
Oh, one more thing.
Sorry, I forgot that. I like to forget it. This is a picture of my car, smashed by a huge rock because I have anti-Bush, anti-war slogans on it, and had been advertised. The FBI and the police refused to investigate. I was attacked on the street. The police refused to come, refused to investigate. I've gotten death threats on the phone and by email. We actually have the address and phone number of one of the guys who did it. It was an interstate call. The police said, don't do it again. Didn't arrest me. On national TV, the program Penn and Teller told people if they see me, or Eric Kushner, the other guy, throw us down a flight of stairs. The ACLU, my lawyer, the police said, that's freedom of speech. Unless, of course, someone tries to throw me down the stairs, in which case I can sue if I'm still alive. I now live in Vienna, Austria. I'm going back next week, actually Sunday, to the United States to be in a symposium in L.A. with Charlie Sheen and some other people. I'm nervous. They asked me, well, can I go back to the United States? Yeah, I can go back, but can I leave? It's a question. Thank you.
Mr. Walter, thanks for taking us through that. I'm sure for people who haven't seen it before, that's fascinating information in there. And you have a website as well, reopen911.org, where it's all there and more.
Yes, so there's a lot more there. I've only really, we go into all the sort of details. Now, the government story depends on 19 Arabs of box cutters doing everything that happened on September 11th. If any one of those events wasn't caused by 19 Arabs, their whole story falls apart. Whereas we have over 154 points that say that the government was wrong. Now, we're not perfect. Some of them are wrong. I don't have answers for everything. But we only have to be right one time. And their story falls apart.
I'd like to open this for questions now. As usual, working press first. If there are any working press members with any questions, could you raise your hands? Yeah. Okay.
Fred Barker, freelance. Just a simple question to begin with. Why and how did you get involved in campaigning along these lines?
Well, I got into it like the fog into hot water. Originally, after seeing the events, I thought the government was telling the truth. I thought it was the impact of the planes and the fire. Being an internet buff, I went on the internet and started researching terrorism, and I found that Saddam did not have weapons of mass destruction, that the poison factories were not poison factories, that Saddam fought bin Laden and al-Qaeda tooth and nail, and more importantly, that invading Iraq would increase terrorism, would be a quagmire for U.S. forces that would suck the life out of the United States economically and militarily. So I started advertising against the Iraq war. I ran full-page ads in the New York Times. L.A. Times refused to run my ads. I ran full-page ads in the USA Today and other various alternative newspapers across the United States. Of course, to no avail. When the war started, I shut up. But after mission accomplished was asserted, I started going to the anti-war rallies to get our people out, where I met a man by the name of Eric Hufschmid, who has some views I don't agree with. But nonetheless, he is the man who turned me on to the fact that explosives were used. And at that point, I felt that I had to be a patriot, that I had to defend our country against the traitors within, the terrorists within. And I started with an event in New York City on September 11th, 2004, which other members of the 911 Truth Organization tried to sabotage. There are moles in these organizations. Many of the people are honest, but there are moles all across these organizations who do things that I don't agree with and are obviously trying to defeat the movement. Since then, I have just kept doing it. I've run TV ads in New York City, more newspaper ads, polls. We had a European tour. We've been to London, Manchester, Paris, Rome, Amsterdam, Vienna, Berlin, and Madrid. I may have left one out. We were recently in Kuala Lumpur, and we're going to be here in Tokyo on October 7th.
Next question. If there's no more journalists with questions, we can throw it over to anybody. If anyone has a question.
That was that good?
No. Gosh. Okay, yeah.
I've heard that you're now fundraising to continue your campaign, and I read somewhere that you've put more than $2 million into this campaign.
About $7 million, soup to nuts. I'm spent, depending on how much you think I was worth to begin with, somewhere between 70% and 80% of my net worth on this, and I just can't continue to do it alone. To be broke is to be powerless. I still have enough money to seed things, and so we're trying to start, you know, it's time for other people to step up to the plate and fund it. But the rich people don't want to be exposed to the harassment that they'll receive, the loans being canceled, the people being fired, the contracts being canceled that they get when they speak up about something like this. Look at the grief Charlie Sheen got for speaking up.
And how well are you doing as far as fundraising is concerned?
Well, if you consider getting less than $100,000 for a $7 million investment, good.
Yeah, I have a question. A lot of people have trouble understanding how something like this could be possible. How could such a monstrous conspiracy be possible? Just logistically sounds, you know, it boggles the mind. How could this be possible? You know, what sort of infrastructure must there be for this to be possible?
Well, first of all, remember Goebbels or Hitler's famous line, the bigger the lie, the easier the public will swallow it. Two, all the major media have come in and supported this lie. all the major media ridicule anyone who stands up or silence them. Like they won't print my $1 million challenge. They won't print the results of my survey. So how many people have to be in on it? Well, remember that for 60 years, the United States ran Cold War operations against not only the Soviets, against the Italian government, against the French government, against the Latin American countries, and nobody ever heard a word about it. Two, they have this thing called the threat of death. You talk, you die. There was the reporter Gary something in San Francisco, committed suicide with two shots to the head. Two shots to the head. Imagine that. Suicide. His best friend, Michael Rupert, said, oh, it was suicide. Now, Rupert is a double-edged sword as well. He refused to admit that explosives were used at the World Trade Towers. And then he said, oh, the 911 movement is dead. Forget about it. Everybody go home. Yet he's the one that blames Cheney for diverting the jets on September 11th. Remember that the best lie is the lie closest to the truth.
Joël Lejean from RTL, from France, actually. What is your scenario? What happened?
My scenario is that Larry Silverstein's security team planted explosives on every floor, in the elevator shafts, and in the basement of the World Trade Center. The explosives in the World Trade Center basement are verified by William Rodriguez, the hero, the last man out of the World Trade Center. He heard explosions in the basement prior to the collapse. The firemen who watched it heard explosions. Okay? At the Pentagon, I've already told you, they fired a remotely controlled plane or a cruise missile type aircraft from somewhere at the Pentagon, testing their own systems and defense. In Pennsylvania, again, no plane parts, just a hole in the ground. Now, the big question that everybody asks me, one that's almost impossible to answer in authoritatively, is what happened to the passenger? Well, one of the planes that day only had 25% load capacity in passengers. One had 30, one had 32, one had 50. Yet all other transcontinental flights that day were 90 to 100% full. The airlines say, oh, well, it was a computer glitch. Four planes in the hijackings, four planes in the attack, all had a computer glitch. They call me a conspiracy nut. I call them coincidence nuts. Now, let's examine the passenger list. Military, ex-military, Department of Defense, military contractors, wives, friends, and relatives. Another coincidence. Now, what happened to them? I don't know. But just as Jack Ruby killed Oswald, it's very possible that under the same document, the Project for New American Century, which called for a new Pearl Harbor to shock America into the war, they told these people, you've got to do it for your country. We've got to take control of the oil in the Middle East. We've got to take build bases from which to attack Russia and stop China's oil. Put them on board and then killed them, covering their tracks so none of them would ever appear before, and sent their body parts to Dover, Delaware, where the guys doing the autopsies identified their DNA. Can I prove that? I can't prove one word of it. But you asked me what I thought. Yes.
Freelance. So who are the villains and what is the motive?
Well, the motives are oil, money, power, actually, if you want to get psychological, fear of not having any control. Who benefited? Follow the money or follow the power. Okay, Halliburton and Bechtel and Carlisle all got bid-free contracts to clean up the mess. The military-industrial complex, which is having its budget cut, got their budgets going through the roof. The military, which is shrinking, began expanding, so they had a power base. Same for the FBI, same for the CIA. Israel had its number two enemy taken out, and we're about to take out its number one enemy. The British got control of part of the oil, and they got the Americans to establish bases for them in the Middle East. Larry Silverstein got $3 billion for a $245 million investment. I think that's a few. I mean, I'm not even saying all of those are correct. But you asked me who benefited. Those are the people who benefited.
If you look at Iraq today, oil is owned by the Iraqi government, not by the American oil companies or the American government. The American oil companies or the American company government cannot own oil in Iraq or any other Arab countries. That's impossible.
No, but they control it, and they've kept it off the market. As a result of Iraq War I, Iraq's oil was taken off the market, and Saudi oil production doubled from 3 million barrels a day to 6. The Saudis are close business partners with the Bush. They're playing what's called the end game on oil. By keeping the Iraqi oil off the market and sitting on top of it, they will be assured that they get that oil when oil becomes a non-existent commodity. The military runs on oil. So we have this huge debt now that the Iraqis owe the United States for all this. The Iraqis will pay it off with oil. So talking about who owns it is, not appropriate, but the fact of the matter is the United States controls it.
Joe.
As you know, the French government has been quite, the French government has been quite opposed to the war in Iraq. I mean, actually, two men were involved, Chirac and de Villepin. They're in bad shape today. They're about 17% of popularity, one of the lowest men ever. I'm not saying that it's because of that, but what do you think about their position? Have you ever heard anything that the French government would have known that would have disposed them to refuse to enter into the war in Iraq? Do you have any information about it?
Well, all of the things that I found on the internet were known to every government in the world. The fact that what Saddam did, I mean, there was a defector, one of Saddam's cousins or something, who was in charge of the weapons, defected, came over and told the United States and the whole world there were no weapons of mass destruction. The poison factory. I didn't touch on Gulf War I, but that was also fabricated. There were no incubator babies. There were no tanks on the border between Iraq and Saudi Arabia about to attack. They knew this all from the first Gulf War. April Gillespie gave Saddam the go-ahead, and then after he went, we tagged him. It was a setup and a fall. So, I mean, the French government had to know more than I know, and what I knew made it obvious that they shouldn't get into this war. And they didn't want to be a focus of the terrorist attacks and retaliation. So to answer your question, yes, they had lots of information, first on the internet, and stuff that I don't even know about.
We have one more question.
U.S. Controls it. Well, it may have some influence, but it doesn't control it.
Well, there's only the only construction progress on time in Iraq is the U.S. Embassy and the military bases. They have done nothing to restore the production of oil in the United in Iraq. Now, they could have put assets to that effect. They haven't done it. That's a form of control. Two, the government of Iraq is a puppet government installed by the United States government. They have free elections, and what do? We say, oh no, well we can't have the freely elected people run this country. You're claiming that we don't control Iraq doesn't really hold water.
I would like to add here that you were wrong about not owning the oil. The entire Iraqi economy was auctioned off to U.S. interests immediately following the invasion, and they're owned mostly by Bush's friends and colleagues. So they do actually own it?
Is that a question?
He made a question based on an erroneous fact, and so I was correcting it.
Chris.
Fred Rocco again. You mentioned in your presentation that 6 or 7 of the hijackers are still alive and news media have interviewed them. It's the first I've heard of it. I'd like to know, obviously, what evidence you have of that, and why would news media interview these people if they can't actually use the reports that they get from it?
Well, they did report it. One time, page 20, and nobody ever heard of it again. If you go to our website, reopen911.org, I have a link to the news article about the hijackers being interviewed. Mostly in Europe, but if you go to the website, we have details there on my website, reopen911.org. I believe it's on the front page. Go down there about the hijackers still alive. Actually, there's a link at the top that hijackers still alive.
Including the BBC.
I'd like to ask a follow-up on that, if I may. Really about the what you were talking about the media as well. And I don't think you said it here, but before when you were talking, you said that a lot of this, what's coming on the media isn't from the reporters, but from the very top levels of these media organisations. And it seems that, I don't know how you envisage that happening, but for the government to come to the world's biggest media organisations, and for them all to agree to that deal, it seems like one of them, and this would be the biggest story of the century, for the government to come and say, look, don't report this, why don't any of them actually broke the story, or why do you think even one of them agreed to it?
They cut a deal with the FCC, and a lot of them are Zionist controlled who want this war to go ahead. The FCC has allowed the media to be consolidated down into 5 corporations worldwide. From the many corporations that were there, they have allowed an oligopoly to be formed of all of the major media. 2, war sells. William Randolph Hearst started the Spanish-American War. When the main battleship blew up, he wired his reporter in Havana, "You send the photos, I'll start the war." He suppressed reports of Hitler's concentration camps. He suppressed Walter Winchell from talking about it. He supported Adolf Hitler because war is good for the press. Just recently, Popular Mechanics, owned by the Hearst Corporation, published an article debunking the 911 conspiracy theories. 4 months before that, they had fired most of the senior staff and hired a man whose last name is Chertoff to become senior editor at age 25 for this article. Chertoff is a cousin of Michael Chertoff, head of Homeland Security. The husband of the publisher of Hearst Corporation is the CIA liaison to Congress. The article cherry-picked all the absurd theories, but didn't mention any of the theories that they could, that would have proven that the 911 conspiracies are not a bunch of bunk. Popular Mechanics said the 5-ton engines, the landing gear, the wing spars and engine mounts vaporized, became like a fluid, and went in one little hole, but they found human body parts. But another asked a few questions. I've had many reporters come to me, do articles, and then they can't publish them. I've had this with interviews for ABC. I've had it. And then another thing they do is to get the article published, they'll start with a derogatory first paragraph, but then they start listing really good facts. The article that recently appeared in New Yorker magazine was an example of this. They started off with actually in this quote, but then we got a lot of hits in, if anybody who bothered to read the article about our facts and figures. So, like the whistleblower on the pictures, these reporters are forced to write an article a certain way. But nonetheless, I go to the TV stations and all the people behind the scenes, they want the DVD, they want to talk to me, they thank me for doing it. But then the head guy goes in and tries to fry me. So the people in the media behind the scenes know the truth, but they're forced right ahead. Charlie Sheen was on. They were going to have Ed Asner on CNN. But the top management called and canceled, said, no, you can't have him on.
Question
number back.
I remember.
Could you use the mic, please, for this voice?
Following on just a minute. Immediately after the September the 11th, there was a threat of bio warfare. What's the aftermath of the anthrax?
The anthrax was identified as U.S. military anthrax. 18 of the scientists involved in the development of that anthrax are dead. Accidents, heart attacks, etc. We've never heard another word about the anthrax, where it came from, who let it out of the military labs. It came out of top secret, highly controlled military labs. No one's been arrested, nothing's been on TV, nothing's been on the news. What happened was, it went to the leaders of Congress. It was a threat. Go along or die.
The oil in Iraq is owned by the Iraqi government. Of course, American companies make a profit out of Iraqi oil, but the bulk of the money goes to the Iraqi government.
Well, there's no oil flowing, so no money is going to the Iraqi government. I'm not arguing about money. The United States doesn't care about money. They throw money around like a drunken sailor. The fact of the matter is, they're selling it to the U.S., so the U.S. gets the oil.
I watched your video on Tashi, and there was repeated reports on put option placed on American Airlines shares prior to the 9/11. And by the day of the attack, the put options were 11 times the daily average. So can you explain to me how?
Well, some of the put options have been traced to an ex-CIA person. The 911 commission report, and by the way, the volume of the put options was 1,000 times normal that day. The 911 commission report deals with it as a footnote, and they say, well, it was not necessary to investigate the put option because we know 19 Arabs did it. That's not an exact quote, but it's definitely in there.
So, you know, it's insider trading. Is that what you're saying?
1,000 times normal. The day before, United Airlines and American Airlines. Again, just another coincidence.
We're starting to, in fact, we've run over a bit. We need to be winding up soon, so if you don't have any more questions.
Yes. Takahashi, associate member here. What's the reaction of the Japanese government on big media?
Well, as Gandhi said, first they ignore you, which they're doing here, and they did initially. First they ignore you, then they attack, then they ridicule you, then they attack you. Then Gandhi said, and then you win. Well, I want to point out that Gandhi was assassinated. He did win, though. The point of the matter is that they ignored me, they ridiculed me, and they have attacked me. Right now, the best method for all governments and all media is to ignore me. I don't exist. They refuse to run my ads in Berlin, London, and Paris. They refuse to interview me in Paris. They refuse to interview me in Berlin. I got only one interview in London for a small paper. Rome, Madrid, we got interviews. They're the least controlled at this point. But again, let's talk about the American media. There was a 1 million person march in Rome against the war. The American media did not report it.
Joe, I think time for a quick question.
I'm from the country of Ricard, and we try to find and analyze things. Conspiracy theories are based on two points. One is a fact which is true, and a lie and an interpretation, basically. Right? If I call you a conspiracy theorist, I'm sure you're going to explain that I'm wrong, and that you're going to have many explanations to me why I'm wrong. But in your own life, I mean, what made you come to become a conspiracy theorist? Are you today worried about your life, as you said, to the point that you continue arguing that you're conspiracy?
Well, first of all, George Bush is a conspiracy theorist. He tells us there was a conspiracy of 19 Arabs to do this. I am a conspiracy theorist. I'm saying there was a conspiracy among members of the United States government and possibly other governments to do this. That doesn't mean I'm wrong, but they use the term pejoratively to say if anyone thinks governments in the world do something like this, they're nuts. The fact of the matter is, in 1961, the United States Joint Chiefs of Staff came up with a thing called Operation Northwoods. We have signed documents released under the Freedom of Information Act. In this, they plan to blow up things in Miami and kill U.S. citizens, to take military personnel, disguise them as civilians, put them on an allegedly civilian aircraft, take off, secretly land it, have a robot plane with a tape recorder take off, get up over Miami going near Cuba, have the tape recorder play "We're under attack by the Cubans," blow it up, blame the Cubans as an excuse to invade Cuba. McNamara turned it down. Less than a year later, Kennedy was dead. That was a conspiracy by the United States Joint Chiefs of Staff, in writing, signed by every one of them. Am I a conspiracy theorist? Not because I say that. If I accuse Benedict Arnold of being a traitor, does that make me a traitor? And I'm 59, I have no kids, and I don't want to get old, so let them kill me. You're going to die anyway.
Maybe just before we finish, October 7th, you have something else going on in Japan. Is that something you'd like to talk about?
Would you... Maybe Jimmy-san knows more about the detail tonight.
Maybe just hope for 1 minute. Just maybe if people are interested. Oh, yeah, just a smile.
Yumi from Global Peace Campaign. On October 7th at Olympic Center, Olympic Youth Center International Conference Hall, we're going to have 911 International Conference. And we're going to have Jimmy Walter, William Rodriguez, I hope Charlie Singh can come.
We're going to invite
and Stephen Jones and
David Ray Griffin
is on the list. But
none of these are solid yet except me and William.
Yeah. Two of them. He has this book. This is Jimmy Walter's book. Who he is.
Now, I ghosted this book quite a few years back. It's called Banzai You Bastard. It's about an American... British soldier captured and held POW by the Japanese in Taiwan. Now, the Japanese military put out an order that when the Americans landed, the Allies landed, to kill all the prisoners and leave no traces. They tried to do it in the Philippines. After the war, they denied ever saying such a thing. In this camp, 9 out of 10 prisoners died. They were forced to work in a copper mine laced with sulfurous acid. Many of them broke their legs intentionally so they wouldn't have to go to work. They got 2 rice balls a day to eat. The Japanese military were SOBs. The American military were war criminals. The firebombing of Tokyo and Kawasaki were war crimes. The nuclear weapons were war crimes. The military is not to be trusted. I urge the Japanese to not remilitarize. Don't let anything like this happen again.
Thank you again for coming today.
Thank you for having me.
It's been fascinating. Well, we hope to see you maybe later in October again when you come back to Japan.
Let me out of the U.S.
Thank you very much, and thank you for coming.